Welcome. Now, my name's Dee Ludlow. Now, before we get into this episode, go to the description, click the link, and get your M&A Mastery Toolkit. This is a free download which gives you some of the tools and resources that you need to start your M&A journey. Don't forget, go to the description, click the link. It's a free download, and enjoy the episode. So today we have Dylan of the Crypto Circle. Now, I always enjoy conversation with Dylan because we like to discuss similar topics. And Dylan being a macro guy, we covered the current economic climate, tech, crypto, and a bunch of other things on this episode as well. So I definitely think it's beneficial, and I would suggest you listen to the entire episode because I think we cover some, you know, quite important things. So enjoy the episode. So, welcome, Dylan. We've talked about having you on for a while now, and we've got loads to cover today. I don't know, let's get started with something that everybody wants to know. So in your opinion, what's going on with the current climate around crypto right now?
It's a tough one, bro. It's a tough one at the moment. Personally, I'm more of a technical trader. When I'm looking at Bitcoin, it tends to follow like technical patterns quite well. And the technicals are showing good things at the moment. It looks like we're probably going to have a test of around about 40k in the coming weeks or so. But just looking more from like an on-chain perspective, it's looking like we're seeing over the last couple of weeks, especially a lot of short-term holder capitulation. So those kind of people that probably bought around February, March, April time, selling their coins, and then you're starting to see these bigger whales with 100 or 100 to 1,000 plus Bitcoin in their wallet starting to accumulate quite strongly at these levels now. So yeah, I'm positive and bullish on the future of Bitcoin, probably heading into the second half of this year. Bullish, man, bullish.
Cool. So you just mentioned we're sort of like, you know, approaching that $40,000 mark, and you know, previous weeks we struggled to really break that level. What's your thoughts around that? You know, we've tested that a few times now, but on the other hand, we've also tested the $30,000 mark a few times, and we're sort of staying in between the 30 and 40k range. Based on what you're looking at, taking on-chain into account and everything else, and into account, you know, you're talking about the second half of this year. When do you think we're likely to sort of break out of the range that we're in right now?
Probably by, I'm starting to earmark around about July, August time that we could start seeing some like real momentum to the upside. I was speaking to Amish yesterday, actually, and he made a really good point. It was like, he said he went to lunch with one of the members from TCC, and they were saying, look, unless we break 40, 42, there's nothing we can really do right now. You're going to do more harm trying to trade this range than you are, you know, kind of just, you're a lot better just holding right now and not doing much. And I've been saying this as well. I think I said it on our podcast that we did last time as well. This whole pattern that's played out, this whole dump that's played out, it reminds me a lot of 2013, man. I've been comparing the whole 2013 cycle to what's been going on currently quite a lot. And it seems like we're in that accumulation phase that we were in 2013. We ran up to like $100, dropped around 60-70% in 2013, and then went on to do a 10x. So I'm closely watching that. I'm very closely watching 2013 to now.
Yeah, and you know, the 2013 cycle, when we talked about the sort of the double peak and sort of how similar it seems to this. But could we argue that, you know, looking at both angles here, that we haven't actually, it wasn't a peak this time? If you look at obviously the chart, we zoom out, it's more like we struggled to break through the previous high, and then we sort of consolidated at the top and then sold off rather than peaked and sold off. Do you think that's going to have, you know, any impact on trying to compare both cycles?
To be honest, I wasn't really around in 2013 to know what the kind of like fundamental environment was like for Bitcoin. Obviously, when we were approaching that top around 50, 60K, there was just enormous amount of FUD, like all the Elon Musk stuff. That's what really pushed us down. That was the catalyst for what really drove us lower. It's difficult to compare from that sense of things, but it does seem like what everyone's saying, like this is not the typical way Bitcoin tops out. You know, it usually has a blow off top, all that kind of stuff, and It just doesn't seem right to me that this is the end of the cycle. If it is, I'm more than happy for it to be. You know, I'll take my profits and I'll walk away. But there's something inside me that's telling me this is not it.
No, I agree, and you know, I definitely think that it's hard to compare the previous cycle to this one. There's a lot of different moving parts to this one than any other cycle that we've experienced if we look at, you know, historical data. So at the moment, we're seeing, you know, mass amounts of mainstream adoption, and which is slightly frustrating recently, you know, being a crypto investor when you're seeing, you know, I would say more bullish news than bad at the moment. Even from the mainstream media, but it seems to, the headlines seem to be all over any sort of bearish news and aren't really promoting the bullish news. And so talking about the mainstream adoption and, you know, seeing now hedge funds talking about it more and more on a daily basis, it's not even like a monthly basis anymore, like with daily I'm seeing news. Listening to all of this and taking it into account, how do you feel that crypto can merge with our current financial system from your point of view?
Into like the macro kind of side of the world, traditional finance and crypto, do you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a tough one, man. And I was actually looking at this data as well the other day around like correlations between traditional finance and Bitcoin, particularly Bitcoin. And from 2013 to 2020, the correlation was largely negative. We had a negative correlation with traditional finance. Bitcoin was generally doing its own thing. Last year, however, all those correlations, so we're looking at real estate, we're looking at equities, we're looking at bonds, we're looking at emerging market currencies, all these kind of things, they turn positive correlation with Bitcoin. Now, whether that's because we saw this huge rush of liquidity coming to the markets and that kind of sent all assets up together, or whether it's completely something different that we've seen this institutional attention now on Bitcoin and that's kind of having a correlation with traditional finance assets. It's a tough one, man. It's a tough one. I do believe eventually going down the line, we will start to see huge kind of correlations between the two. This Wyckoff stuff especially, right? When did we ever see Wyckoff in Bitcoin before? I'm sure we might have, but it just seems like we're starting to see more of these institutional patterns play out on Bitcoin now.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And when you do try and look at how both connect with each other, and, you know, it's something that we... I was talking to someone the other day, and they mentioned, you know, they're not a Bitcoin investor, but they've been, you know, heavily trading the financial markets for over 20 years, and they were saying that, I was talking about the huge leverage that gets used in crypto, and you know, he was like, you know, do you think this has had you know, an impact on the price action? He said, you know, we're maybe the huge leverage sent it to where it was, and then because it's now a lot of these people have been liquidated, it sent it back to where its true value is at. Now, obviously, knowing and understanding Bitcoin and the way it moves, you know, I'm going to be more defensive on that. Even though I like, you know, like I said, we are definitely not looking for confirmation bias, but just understanding the stuff that, you know, we research and look into, I was a bit like, you know, there's a lot more to this, but it is quite a good point. What do you feel that, you know, because it's such a volatile asset and massive amounts of leverage is being used, do you feel that has an impact on the sharp shoots up and down?
Yeah, leverage does. You could see it around 60K, man, when we topped out. You know, we were breaking the highs like on a lower time frame kind of basis, like 4 hour, 12 hour, those kind of things. We were breaking the recent highs. And then you could just see straight away longs were just getting liquidated, and then it was just prices rolling over. So it was just heavily, heavily leveraged, man. And yeah. I hate it, mate. I absolutely despise leverage. I don't see the need for using leverage when you're seeing the kind of percentage returns that we get on a daily basis.
Yeah. So
are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Since not a 140x leverage type of guy.
Trust me, bro. I just stay away from it. You know what? I used to trade a little bit of leverage in the bear market in 2018. I was heavily on BitMEX. I used to use that quite a lot, and I learned some lessons from that. But I'm not a leverage guy, man. Never will use it.
And look, you know, it's such a volatile asset, and the moves are so fast and sharp. You could never trade leverage, and you know if you're coming from especially the FX background, and then you start trading crypto.
Oh yeah,
you don't need to trade leverage. So now a lot of people are wondering what could potentially happen with everything going on, right? You know, the amount of monetary policy just being totally abused. Now, I've seen the recession signal on the World Economic Forum article, and they're saying the spread between the 10-year treasury yield and the 3-month yield dropped below zero, and how a recession typically follows after this. What's your comments, or could you add anything to that?
Yeah, so obviously the bond market is something that I pay particular attention to, and something that I was watching on Real Vision as well recently, and they were talking about how, okay, so we're in this environment right now where everyone's talking about inflation. Is it transitory? That's the main kind of narrative right now that's been over the last month. Is inflation transitory? To an extent, I think it is. And I think inflation's peaked for now, especially when you look at it on a year-on-year perspective, because that's what economists do, right? They look at it on a year-on-year perspective. And then if you're going back to this time last year, inflation was only increasing between June 2020 and December 2020. So as we go on month on month now, those inflation year on year numbers are going to come down. So inflation, I think, has peaked now. And what I think is happening is if you look at China in particularly, because they're quite a good leading indicator of the business cycle. So, and obviously one of the biggest manufacturers in the world, you're starting to see China's economic growth starting to taper off a bit now. And if that's a sign towards the rest of the world, then we could be heading for, I'm not saying it's going to be like a double dip and, you know, we see a huge market sell off again, but there are certain factors that I think we just need to take into consideration. If anything, I think it's bullish, mate, for any of these risk assets, because that just means that central banks will continue printing money. And that's, as we know, over the last year, that's been very good for risk assets, especially Bitcoin.
Yeah. And look, I think that, you know, especially now people are sort of allowed out, I do feel that we're probably going to see, you know, a mini sort of economic boom. But, you know, the question is this going to make up for, you know, no real economic growth over the last 18 months because people have been in lockdowns? And, you know, human behavior, you know, doesn't change much. So if you're a spender, once a spender, always a spender. So even people, you know, haven't been able to spend for so long, they always find a way to spend the extra money, and they end up spending it quite quickly. So even with a sort of mini economic boom for maybe one, maybe two quarters max, how can we justify making up for sort of all the lost real economic growth due to the current circumstances? And also, look, overall, our national debt is like 92% of GDP, which is the highest we've had since like 1962 in the UK. So, yeah, based on what I've just said, what's your thoughts on that?
Do you know what, mate? With this whole what's going on right now, we've never, ever been in these waters before. So even like the most experienced like macro economists, they don't even know what the fuck's going on right now. So it's really crazy, man. And one thing I'm really paying attention to is like you just said, a lot of people have been saving money, and they're kind of ready to spend that. There's a lot of kind of pent up demand. I'm keeping an eye on like the employment for the workforce, especially in the US. And it seems like that's what the kind of Federal Reserve are looking at as well in terms of how employment fares. And then once we get to a level where employment's at a decent level, we can start to kind of scale back on our asset purchasing and things like that. But for me, I don't see any strength in the labor market yet. It seems like it'll be interesting actually in September when some of these kind of fiscal stimulus payments start winding down, and people have to kind of fend for themselves. So I think the fourth quarter will be really telling in terms of whether we do enter this kind of economic drop down or recession, as you said, or whether we kind of, or whether the economic growth just continues and we just continue to come out of this pandemic strong.
Yeah. And sort of the whole sort of work from home narrative. Now, you know, I see people saying that, you know, people are going to, you know, we're already seeing. So Goldman Sachs, I think, posted one of their best quarters ever working from home last year, but now they're sort of ordering everyone to go back to work. Now, this obviously could be a few reasons. One could be because they have one of the most expensive pieces of real estate in New York City and they want to make sure someone's in it. But the work from home narrative, I think one thing that people are leaving out of this discussion is tech. Now, it's like people need to go back to work. This isn't how things work and all of this stuff. But then when you look at tech and what tech's doing from, you know, virtual reality, augmented reality, everything that's going on, even like 3D print, this is sort of making people sort of redundant in their jobs. And it's been a topic of conversation for probably about 20 years. But I do feel that because of the pandemic and everything that's happened over the last 18 months to 24 months, we've had to adapt to certain situations and people have used tech to do it. So now tech is becoming, more used than people thought it would. Was as far as how quick it's moved. And by this, I mean, you're talking like Elon Musk and Neuralink. So Elon's now, you know, going to be putting a chip into people's brains if they want it. And a robot's going to do it. So that the precision on that sort of task there, as a surgeon would normally do, if we can trust a robot to insert a chip into your brain, then what can you not trust a robot to do? So if the surgeon job's on the line, who else's job is on the line? And like I said, it's been a topic of conversation for about 20 years, but I do feel now that we're in a situation where work from home, crossing with tech, you know, maybe
you've got a problem.
Yes, exactly. So what's your
thoughts? Yeah, you've got a big problem, man. I think, especially looking at like previous generation, I think it's the baby boomers, not so much Gen Z and millennials, the baby boomers especially. They've been made redundant, right? A lot of the people probably been made redundant. They're not going to want to go out and find a job now, are they? Or are they? You know, are they going to want to go back out and go back into the workforce now? Or are they just going to want to retire? You know, I don't know. So you've got that side of things where I don't think people are taking into consideration when it comes to employment as well. And I mean, you've been talking about this a lot, mate, universal basic income. When's that going to come in? When's that going to drop in now? That's a whole other curveball being put into the picture.
Yeah, and they've seen, you know, they're rolling out in Wales first. So we've already seen it happening. England's going to follow shortly, in my opinion. And I think it's needed because now you've told, no, not you, but the government has told us to stay at home. And they've, you know, provided furlough and all the different incentives to make sure, you know, we keep the economy strong, even if it's false, but still it's important to them. And we're in a situation now where people have been told to stay at home and still get paid. So how are they going to replace furlough? And especially with tech replacing a lot of jobs. Now, look, if you're someone like Bezos, right, and you know robots can do a lot of the stuff, like he's acquiring businesses weekly by the looks. And if robots can control the majority of the labor in his businesses, why would you employ people? And this isn't, you know, it all depends on how you look at this, right? But people, especially who run businesses, they're in it to make money and increase margins. Why would you not do it with robots? Now, I was talking about 3D print on the mastermind last week, and they can now print a nutritious foods through the 3D print. So what happens then to like producers of food? And if you can print food and you can do, and they can print houses and stuff, it's get to the stage where what do they need people to do as far, and what happens to the workforce then? I think you made a good point. And I think it's something that gets talked about on Real Vision quite a lot, is people opting out of the labor force. And, you know, it's going to become more and more. The more, you know, help you give to people, the more they're not going to want to work. We already see it now. It's hard to get people back to work.
Yeah, I think your thinking is spot on, man. And you're probably looking like way, way further down the line than a lot of people are. And that's just you as an individual, your mindset, you like to look way further ahead than most. But what industries do you reckon, like in the next, maybe, I don't know, three years are going to be most impacted from this? Do you think it's most like manufacturing mainly?
Yeah,
in the short term?
Yeah, I think manufacturing is going to probably be affected the most. But I think that because of how fast this is moving now, where, you know, like I said, it's good to think forward and stuff, but this has really caught up now more than ever. I don't think anyone thought even business deals would be, billion-dollar business deals would be done on Zoom. I don't think people would have thought that two years ago, but that's just what's happening now. Most people's business run on Zoom, and, you know, we're on Zoom. So I think that one industry that will be impacted in the short to midterm that I think that tech hasn't had a hold of it yet is real estate. I feel that not just the development side of it, but also the legals and different things like that. Like, we're still very old school. I'm not in the UK at the moment. I've got a refinance going through and they want a wet signature. Now, you know, I'm like, why don't you just use PandaDoc or DocuSign? So I think that blockchain and the smart contract stuff will have definitely affect the tokenization of real estate, I think, from that point of view. But on the tech side of stuff, where it comes to the building, Taylor Wimpey already using like modular roofs and different things like that. So I think that the modular stuff is already enforced. But in New York at the moment, they've just printed a house and is on the market for half the price of any other house on the street. I think the labor, there was three people that worked the machine. The materials are obviously in the machine. Now that changes the entire game of real estate. So I do feel that we're going to see an impact on real estate in the short to midterm, because it's one of those industries that I don't feel that has been really affected yet, like everything else.
No, it hasn't, has it at all? I literally, there was some numbers that's come out of the UK yesterday as well around housing, right?
Yeah.
Housing prices are like just flying, mate, through the roof. I was like, wow, couldn't believe it, mate. And you're someone who I have no clue what's going on with the real estate market in all honesty, mate. It's not something I've generally paid attention to. So it's times like this where I can learn a lot from you, in all honesty.
Yeah, mate, do you know what? Like you said then, like we've just seen the house prices and how they've increased. And we also seen the US house prices. I think it said that they're moving as fast as they were before the 2007 subprime mortgage bubble. So, and like we said, we're seeing the same in the UK and other places globally. So things are moving quickly, and this is what sort of concerns me. We are in sort of uncharted territory, and we can only look at the indicators that we know of, right? And we can only follow the smartest minds in the world. And like you said, I think you're spot on. You know, people don't really know how to approach this situation. So, you know, do you either just make the most of the amount of QE being done and just sort of ride the equity markets, the housing market, and then hope you don't, you're out before it tops out. And then, and that's all we can hope for. And another thing I wanted to say was, you know, the US national debt now is at $28 trillion, right? I think it's actually $157 trillion if you counted all the bills that need to be paid into the future. So my question is, being a macro guy, mate, is this too big to repay now? So even if you raise taxes and cut spending, has this gone too far?
Oh, mate, we're way past it. We're way past that, man. We're way past that. Like, it's got to be something like a debt jubilee or something like that. Yeah. They're going to have to do something like to wipe this clean now, because it's getting out of hand. And if what I was saying just previously comes to fruition, so we get that slowdown in economic growth, comes to the point where governments are going to have to do more monetary and fiscal stimulus. Mm. Where does it end? Like, where does it end?
Yeah.
Does it end?
What does that look like, though? The fact that it's too big to repay and a debt jubilee, which, you know, is one of the things that I think is the most sensible option here to look at what could potentially happen. What does that look like, in your opinion, for the global economy?
Well, from a financial markets perspective, it's just up only, mate. I can't see anything else but up only. I'm not sure what that does for the average consumer, you know, what that looks like for them. Because I was looking at an interesting stat the other day that 35% of US households are invested in the equity market in some form or the other. So not only have you got the Fed wanting to prop up equity markets just to maintain control over global economies, but you've got it now from a sense of, okay, we need to protect the consumer's wallet here as well, you know, because if 35% of the US households have equity market exposure, if that dumps 20% or we get like a COVID correction or something worse, then you got a bit more, you got another problem as well right there.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. And also bringing this to the UK now, so I'm seeing that, I know they've said it before, but they're saying they're ending furlough in September. And I did see Rishi said that there will be no more extra toppings from the state. So again, with, we just talked about the whole the work from home narrative and now UBI, with furlough ending and a lot of the incentives ending, how do you think that's going to affect things in the UK?
I feel like the UK is faring probably a little bit better than other markets at the moment, other countries, sorry, at the moment, just purely from looking at economic data that's coming out, you know, jobs, especially retail sales, just the way the economy is progressing. And even the Bank of England have come out, and obviously never trust a central banker, but they're coming out quite positive on the outlook, on the economic outlook for the UK. So I think the UK is going to do better than most going into the second half of the year, potentially. I think one thing that people aren't, I'm just going to go quick, throw like a little spanner in here, is the Delta variant. Something that I've been keeping an eye on the last couple of days, it's spreading around the world pretty quickly. And I think that's a factor that not a lot of people are taking into consideration right now. Something just lurking around the corner, COVID lurking around the corner once again. So you never know what could happen.
Yeah, exactly. But in the UK now, when the thing that worries me most is that most people have their money in three places. One is usually home equity, the other is pensions, and the other is the stock market, right? So if people stop working, or they get laid off because there's no furlough, there's obviously all types of incentives at the moment for tenants and protection for tenants not to pay rent and different things like that. So if someone loses their job, right, usually they start paying their credit card bill first, then potentially their car loan. And then last but not least is their rent or their mortgage, because that's usually the biggest outgoing, but it's also the most important to keep the roof over their head. So if someone loses their job and there isn't as many jobs available, which right now I see a lot of people talking about recruiting and people just don't want to work. At this point, the thing that concerns me is, are people then going to be forced to go back to work because they have no choice and just take any job they can because they will be employers? Or are people just going to be hoping that they get taken care of and then the state will step in again and be like, look, here's a UBI, we're going to take care of you? Because this can obviously affect landlords, which I look at this sector a lot because obviously I am one. So it can be concerning. So that's probably my main concern from the furlough scheme. But I do feel what's happening in the States, we're just going to have to pretty much follow suit. And as much as I feel that, like you mentioned, the UK handled it better with the Delta variant or a new one or whatever else that comes out in the short term, there's always something.
Always something, man.
That's something I feel that we can't really prepare for.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a complete flip. Like what they've got a bigger problem on their hands now, which is changing the human mindset. Because over the last year, everyone's got comfortable getting these checks, and like you said, are they going to go back to work, and are they going to get a mediocre job, which is something way subpar to what they were doing before probably the pandemic, right? They're probably in like a medium to high skilled job, requiring some sort of actual human knowledge as opposed to machinery and robotics and things like that. Do they end up going to a more mediocre job? And then does that give reason to these industries to then start automating things? Is that the way this whole process unfolds? Yeah.
I agree. And look, you're an educated person, right? And the one thing that I'd like to ask you is, are kids now going to uni to study a profession that may not be needed in 10 years? So, people go into debt, they go to uni, they study, and hoping they're going to come out and get a job that, sort of is in line with the debt they've taken on and then sort of pay it down over a long time. Now, what's your opinion on the fact that some of these people could be studying for many, many years to be in an industry that could be affected massively by tech, blockchain, whatever it is, whatever side of tech it is? Do you feel that could be an issue at the moment?
Yeah, massively, man, massively. And I was having this conversation with a family member the other day, actually, around university and things like that. And I was like, yeah, like, unless you're going to be a doctor, like an optometrist or something which requires actual qualifications, you do not need to be going to university. You do not need to be going to university. I don't see the point, mate. I was even saying to myself, like, when I eventually have a kid, I'm probably, if they want to go to uni, by all means, go get the life experience. But I wouldn't want to send them to uni. No, I don't think so.
And I think the education system is one of the ones that, let's be fair, it's needed some sort of facelift for a long time. But I've seen like the 3D internet and how in moving online. And at the start, having children myself, I was like, how is this? I see how it will work because they'll just put it on you. But I'm like, my kids have been on Zoom in their lessons, and you know, under 6 years old, it's hard to keep them in front of a Zoom screen with a teacher just talking, right? Unless it's something like YouTube on or something, they're just not interested. Now, then I thought, what happens when they put VR with that and make it more interactive? And I was like, if they could link VR and AR with the 3D internet and how education will now be sort of put across to kids, now I can see it. You know, I'm like, if you can make it interactive, then I get it. So that's, I think, could be another one of the industries that could be affected massively. And I do think it's needed. You know, if we're now going to be online watching, a teacher talk, why not get taught by the best teacher? You know, and I'm not saying that every teacher is bad or some are bad and whatever, you know, there's always bad and good in every job. But at the end of the day, if my kids are online and it's down to the person in front, then okay, the best teachers in the world. I did say this a while back on one of my podcasts, but I'm not sure if you heard it, is why don't they, you know, just give those teachers the credit and give them, you know, they could have a subscription with the best teachers in the world, and then they could teach. And then if the local teachers deliver the content, so you watch this great teacher talk and the local teacher has to sort of take the questions and stuff at the end, it sort of brings the whole level of the education system up, because the local teacher has to level up because they're showing content from a great teacher. So and you add VR to it, I think that I just going back to when we talked about which industries, I think that one's going to be again another one that's well overdue for a bit of a facelift.
Game changer, mate, game changer. VR, AR is going to be a huge, and I work with these kind of technologies not often, but I work in the marketing kind of creative industry, so we work a lot with, at the moment, AR particularly. So the things that you're seeing on, like, with all these filters and things like that, right? AR, and you can see a lot of brands are starting to lean that way now towards AR, shoppable AR especially, you know, like being able to go on Instagram, click, you can see now on Instagram, right, there's that shop icon at the bottom of the screen, so you can literally just literally start shopping clothes through there, clicking on an item like a t-shirt or a hat, having it literally opening your camera and then literally seeing it on yourself with like a try-on feature. It's changing the game, mate, and I don't think there's been a lot of hype around VR and AR for the last kind of 5-10 years, maybe 5 years more so, I'd say, and it's never really delivered yet. And I think, the pandemic's going to accelerate that industry massively over the next 5 years again, I'd say.
Yeah, do you know, I think that with VR and AR, even though the technology's been there for, like, I think VR's been around,
been around for time,
I think, though, that because other technology wasn't ready, it was never really used, whereas now it's like, well, now would be the perfect time and the perfect environment for VR to sort of flourish. And talking about VR and sort of the metaverse and different things like that, I feel that, you know, AR is probably going to become more of our day-to-day, and then our VR is going to be our escape. So into sort of the metaverse, like Ready Player One style. But then the AR, the question I'd like to ask you now, and then there's something that I'd like to look back at in the future, is I really feel that AR and these glasses that Facebook and Apple are working on, and no doubt Amazon will have their own set too. Yeah. I honestly think in the next 10 years, we will not have phones. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can see it. I can definitely see it. I can definitely see it. Again, I'm someone who's massively into this kind of stuff. Like from when I was ages ago, man, I just used to watch Steve Jobs' Apple keynotes when he first released the iPhone, and then when he first released FaceTime. I just found the guy fascinating. So I'm a big proponent for all this tech and future thinking, man. And it's going to be a point where it's like some sort of glass or contact lens or something like that will be interacting with an interface. The reason, obviously, it's quite clear to see, the reason it's not taken off is nobody has got it right yet on how to integrate it into the real world. Most of the hardware is too bulky, and and it's obvious you can't wear that on the street every day. It needs to be something like a glass or a contact lens or something which is hidden in plain sight to take this really commercial. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. It's going to be interesting.
No, it's good to speak to you on that one. Now, taking you back, your macro guys, let me, I took you off track a little bit there. So we've seen that, you know, Brent crude futures hit, I think it was like $75 a barrel or around there for the first time since October 2018. And yeah. I've seen that it was an EIA report, I think. It showed that, yeah, I think that's what it's called, showed the stocks of crude oil in the US fell by, you know, about 7.6 million barrels or something like that in June. So this was like the fifth consecutive period of decline, right? And it was the largest since the last week of April. So what do you think this means from your opinion?
Well, a shooting up oil price, a higher oil price?
Yeah, yeah. Well, with everything going on, you think that, yeah, obviously we've seen oil in a completely different position not so long ago.
Yeah, yeah, of course, mate. It was negative like about a year ago, right? literally. So, yeah, to be honest with you, it's not a surprise because higher oil prices are generally a proponent of inflation. So we do generally see that. So it's not anything new. A lot right now is relying on pretty much OPEC and the kind of decisions they make. They are literally like the oil cartel, right? Saudi Arabia, Russia, and a couple of other countries, but it's mainly Saudi Arabia and Russia who kind of control things pretty much. So they've got a meeting tomorrow, actually. So the 1st of July tomorrow. So it'll be interesting to see what they say. But it seems as though if we are seeing this economic pickup again and demand is coming through, then oil is going to be one of the first kind of things which shoots higher because oil we use for everything, right? Transport obviously mainly. So when things start coming back online, you're going to see oil demand start to rocket. Bank of America actually came out the other day and said they see oil at $100 per barrel. Oof. which I don't know what happens there. I don't know what happens when we get to that level, whether that itself could be the catalyst for us to roll over and the equity markets have a sharp correction. I do feel like it's coming. I do feel like the equity markets going to have a short, sharp sell-off between now and the end of the year. Just because the dollar just is starting to gain a bit of strength now, ever since the FOMC and the Federal Reserve starting to hint at interest rate hikes, we're starting to see a bit of dollar strength now. And I think it's temporary, but I think in the meantime, we do get some sort of a sell-off in risk assets. And I think that's going to shit a lot of people up.
Right, you straight on to my next question. yeah, you've teed it up nicely there. So yeah, so we've seen obviously some of the commodities sell off now, and we're seeing talking about the DXY, it looks like it's about to retest the 92.32 level. So what is your thoughts on dollar strength? I know you touched on it then, but how long does that last? And you know, because we've seen a lot of people especially over the last year, just short the dollar. And this, what's happening recently, I think has caught a lot of people out. So yeah, what's your thoughts on dollar strength?
Yeah, it's always taking the other side of the trade, right? Like when everyone's on one side of the trade, you want to generally be on the opposite side. And it's the same thing as Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin was at like 10K. Everyone wanted to short it. What happened? It went to 20K. At 60K, everyone was screaming for 100K. What did it do? It rolled all the shit down. So even with DXY, everyone was so, myself included, I was quite bearish when DXY was at the bottom of that range. But then it just started to just really start to consolidate. And it's seen a nice push higher, obviously, off of the fundamental news of the Federal Reserve as well. So yeah, I'm seeing dollar strength at the moment, and I think that's a lot to do with inflation peaking. Like you said, commodities are starting to decrease now. Commodity prices are starting to drop off, which again alludes to the narrative that inflation has probably peaked for now. And yeah, I don't know how that, generally when the dollar moves up and it moves up fast, it's a wrecking ball for like other risk assets. So you generally will see an equity sell-off. You'll probably see bonds rally higher. I don't know how that affects crypto because, again, crypto is a bit on and off when it comes to these correlations. It can sometimes and it can't. But because it's the dollar, and obviously Bitcoin's denominated in the dollar, it might have some sort of a reaction. It might do.
Yeah, that was, I was just about to ask you. So I always felt that, you know, at some point, crypto, especially Bitcoin, would just disconnect completely from, you know, equities at some point when equities rolled over. But what do you think would happen if equities did roll over right now? What does that mean for Bitcoin?
I think you'd see the correlation. Anytime it's like a short, sharp kind of, everyone's just, you got to look at it from like the investor standpoint, right? Whenever there's a sharp sell-off, everyone's like shit, scrambling for dollars. Everyone will just scramble for cash at that point.
Yeah.
And that means all risk assets will go down, not just one asset class. So I think it'll be like more of a COVID kind of style thing, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah, same. I think that if equities rolled over now, it'd be devastating for Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, you saw it right on, was it last week or the week before on Friday, straight after the FOMC, the day after it, I think equities tanked like about 2 or 3%. And just off of that one day, it just shows you how sensitive markets are right now. Right.
Oh yeah.
And how, obviously you can see on the equity market, on the charts, like they've just crawled back to their all time highs, literally. And it doesn't fill you with a lot of confidence, but I am seeing in some of like the reports I've been reading, however, just to kind of take the other side of the argument, people are allocating more to equities and they are bullish on equities in the second half of this year still, albeit a little bit more tentatively. However, allocations are still towards the equity market and bullish strength going into the second half of the year. So we'll see how it pans out.
So in your opinion, for Bitcoin to now continue on his path to six figures at least, what does Bitcoin need right now? What news does Bitcoin need?
Definitely not Elon Musk and nothing from him. please, sir, just stay off your Twitter, man. That's all we ask. It's been a good like couple of month or so where he's not said anything, and it's peaceful, man. It's peaceful. What do we need? Well, it seems like we've had the perfect story, right, over the last month with the country adopting it, and it didn't do anything. Mm. So that was a bit of an anticlimax. Yeah. But what does Bitcoin need? I guess from an on-chain perspective, I'd like to see more whales coming in, like more like people who have like 1,000+ BTC in their wallet, like those kind of holders. We need to see whales and big time people stepping in, because it seems like even so far, there's been like a lot of retail just kind of buying this dip at the moment, which is great. It's great for the network. Great to kind of decentralize the network further, have as many coins as distributed as possible. But yeah, I feel like it just needs, I feel like it will get to 100K. I'm still very confident it'll do that by the end of this year. Mm. But we need some like big time guys to step in pretty soon, because the whole story at the moment is that institutional demand is like dried up quite a lot. And you can see that through the GBTC shares and things like that, Grayscale shares. Mm. So we need that institutional demand to start picking back up again. Price action will obviously play a major factor as well, because Bitcoin is heavily technically reliant. So yeah, a nice break above 40K with a bit of institutional demand, I can see us heading towards those highs again.
Yeah. And like you just said, the nation state adoption, you would have thought something that big would have moved the market a little bit more, or actually moved the market.
Yeah. Do you know what? I saw something the other day, actually. So did you remember when you saw the news the other day where it was like they asked for help from the World Bank or another governing body, and they turned it down? Give me one sec, mate. I'm just trying to find this article. So it was something to do like the Central American something bank or something like that stepped in. They said they would help El Salvador, in particular with some like tech assistance that they needed to get it all set up and running. So that includes like countries like Spain, Argentina, and a few others. But it just shows like some of these like more emerging, I don't know if you would call them emerging economies, but slightly lower nation states, they're starting to like gang up together, it seems like, and they're starting to join forces.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's fantastic, man. You know what I mean? That's what we want. If these countries aren't going to, well, to say almost beat the G4, the big guys on their own, they need to kind of join forces and do it together.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I want to get your opinion on, because Bezos is now, he's going to space, right? And he's selling this ticket and it went for $28 million. Now, the person that bought that ticket, what do you think the reason is they bought that ticket? Was it for the network to sit next to Bezos? Because I think, isn't it only like 10 minutes or something, this flight or something, something like that? Do you think this person...
How much did he buy it for?
$28 million to sit next to Bezos on this going to space.
Do we know who it is?
They, I don't think they've revealed the person yet. They said they're going to reveal the person soon. Now, yeah, do you feel that this is just somebody that wants to get the network, or do you think they've got a genuine like, interest in going to space, or what would you do in this situation? If your net worth was like 500 million and 28 million was pennies to you, would you pay the 28 million to go with Bezos?
Fucking hell, mate. I don't know. 28 million, fucking hell, just to go to space. Shit, bro.
Yeah.
I don't know, mate. Would you pay 28 million to go into space?
Not to go to space. If I felt that I could get something out of it with Bezos being the...
With Bezos, okay, you're taking another angle. Yeah.
Yeah, the space thing does interest me, but I wouldn't be that bothered to pay 28 million to go to space.
Do you not think it could just be one of his friends, or it could just be one of his mates, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I hope it's one of these like crypto millionaires, overnight millionaires. Just somebody like Da Vinci J15 or something.
Yeah. One of those crypto Twitter influencers or something.
Yeah, just so they can, you know, the real like crypto maxis where they live and die crypto, just to sit next to him and just drill it in his head for however long it is. Yeah. I'm just wondering. I thought $28 million. I thought some of the NFTs was
expensive.
and they are, but 28 million for like a, and I'm sure I read, I may be wrong, right? So I have to fact check this, but I think it's like 10 or 12 minutes. I'm not sure if they're just going out of orbit and then coming straight back. So,
oh, is that it? Oh, right. 10 or 12 minutes. I was thinking like days, bro. I was thinking
they're
going to be out there for days.
Yeah. So that's what I'm like, whoever's listening have to fact check it, but I'm pretty sure I read that it wasn't that long. Now, if it was like days or weeks, then I still, it's $28 million, a lot of money, but I can understand you start to get to know Jeff Bezos a bit more and his brother's going too. But if it is the 10 and 12 minutes, then it's just going to be a handshake, sit in your seat. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah. What do you make of this whole space race right now? So you've got Amazon, you've got Virgin Galactic who are making waves with Chamath as well, as a legend. Chamath.
Yeah.
And then you've got obviously Starlink and Tesla. Who do you reckon is leading that kind of that whole industry right now?
I think that Virgin are probably leading it. They've been working on this for a long time. And I think that, you know, obviously SpaceX make the most noise, but usually the noise, it doesn't mean anything. So, but I think that Bezos also, he has the power to catch up quite quick. So, but I think Virgin are probably leading the race to this. They've been working on this for a very, very long time. But I suppose we don't know how long, you know, Musk and Bezos have really been working on this and how far ahead they are. But what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think, I'm siding with you on Virgin because I think they've rolled it out more commercially than the other two. They've put out, like, I don't know if you've seen the part of like adverts and stuff for it with like these huge, like galactic kind of Star Trek kind of spaceships, which they're going to take people in. It looks amazing, in all honesty. But yeah, I think Virgin are leading it. I'd put SpaceX second in the race. I don't know whether it's like you said, because they're just making so much noise and the whole Elon hype is like kind of drawing me in. I don't know whether it's that. And then I'd put Amazon, like, because I have no idea what Bezos is doing with his kind of thing. So I've not really researched into it too much.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like with Bezos, you can't write the guy off. But even though it seems like he's miles behind, I just don't know. But yeah, it's interesting times. But the one thing that interests me about this more than anything is we're talking a lot about space now. But we're just, you know, we're going down a completely different rabbit hole now. But
I
think NASA originally was working on the ocean and research on the ocean, and then they moved to space. So that worries me. It's like, what did you find to move?
What do you mean researching the ocean? Like, what do you mean?
I think NASA was created, I might be wrong, but NASA was created to, where they're doing their sort of space research, that they was originally doing research under the ocean and you know, and then they years ago they moved and started research in space instead. Now it could have been because they just maybe come across new technology to see like what's out there instead. But yeah, we still don't know. I think I've seen an article that says we know more about space than we do our own ocean. So the space stuff does interest me, but you know, what about what's on the planet already?
I can't remember the stat that I saw, but there's only like a certain depth that we've gone in the sea so far. Yeah. There's like huge amount of territory that we've not covered in the oceans yet, and it just makes you like scratch your head a little bit as to like what's below there, you know, like
it's
like these one-eyed creatures or something like that, you know what I mean?
It's very, very interesting. So But look, mate, I'm going to let you get some sun in the UK today. But I have one last question before we wrap this up.
Let's do it.
What's your most conservative BTC and ETH price by Christmas?
By Christmas? Okay, now it's got to be a jolly Christmas, hopefully, man. let's have a look. What are we thinking? Conservatively?
Yeah.
I have a prediction in mind, which is 200K. I want it to be, not I want it, but I would like it to be at 200K. I think it'll, I'm not going to stray away from that. I've been saying that kind of pretty much all year, so 200K. But more conservative, I'd say like 150. 150, probably okay, conservative okay. For BTC. And ETH, I have a feeling ETH is going to outpace it. It always generally does anyway. 10K, yeah, let's say 10, nice round figure, 10K ETH.
Well, people are going to be definitely having a good Christmas if that happens. So, yeah, mate, I hope it does. But nah, really appreciate it.
What about
your
time. You? What are you thinking?
If I was
just before you close it up.
If I was going to be real conservative for BTC, I would be at like 75K, real conservative.
Oh, really? Okay, wow. That makes me sound like a maxi, man.
No. The only reason I say it is because I don't know how long it's going to take. Like, it's hard to say, right? Because I have a better idea where we're at in September. Because if we're still, which I don't think we're still going to be in this range in September, but if we were to be in this range, then I'd find it very difficult for us to then jump the six figures. Now, it could happen because we've seen it move very fast before, but and it doesn't take a lot, you know, like, you know, if that institutional capital come back into the space in force, and before you know it, it pops. So, but if I was going to be real conservative, I'd say 75. ETH, I think, if I was going to be real conservative on ETH, I'd say 5K. It all depends on, as soon as we start moving back towards the upside, and how quick it moves, because we know it's like, who would have thought that Bitcoin would be consolidating like this for this long? Especially,
yeah, I know.
So, you know, I didn't even expect this to, I felt that we was going to have like a bit of a correction coming, but I definitely didn't think it was going to be like this.
Not at all, man.
For this long. No. So, but
that's the beauty of it. And that's the beauty of it. And that's what makes me think like, okay, we've almost caught everybody that needed to be caught off guard, you know, like,
yeah.
Some guy put out a tweet, one of these crypto influencers, he was like, and it was in January, he put this tweet out as well. It was crazy. The accuracy is crazy. He was like, I think Bitcoin will top out around 50-60K, will consolidate between 20-30K, and then make everyone think the bull market's over, shit everybody up, consolidate for a few months, and then we'll make the move to 100K. And that was his scenario.
Wow.
Or if Bitcoin was to hit 100K, what would need to happen? Because if you think about it, mate, like, when we were at 60K, could we really have gone on to like 250K with the state of the space was in then, where everyone was just ridiculously bullish? Yeah, I just couldn't see it going on for much longer, man. Hindsight's so beautiful.
I agree. And look, and you know, like we just said then, how no one expected it to sort of, well, maybe one or two expected it to do what it's done now, but as fast as that dipped, it can also go the other direction as just as quick. So and I definitely feel that we're in for another sort of parabolic move at some point, and I hope it does take us, you know, if we're going to look at all the indicators that we would typically look at, like stock to flow and just the way market cycles for Bitcoin moves, then 150 to 200K seems just normal anyway. So I hope that's what happens, you know, but I just, until we're out of this sort of range, I want to see where we're at in September, and then I could probably make my mind up a little bit better.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And just final maybe point from me. I was watching this interview with this on-chain guy yesterday, and he was like, Bitcoin is literally probably in its like lifespan ever from since 2010. It's at the final boss now, which is it's up against the central banks. It's being adopted as legal tender in nations. This is the final level for Bitcoin to cross, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, yeah, if you're looking at it from like a game perspective, this is the final boss basically. And if it beats this, it's, you know, game over. It's done.
It is.
Literally. Awesome.
Well, look, mate, I really appreciate your time today.
I appreciate you having me on. I didn't even get to say it at the beginning of the episode, but yeah, I appreciate you having me on, man. And you're someone who I respect a hell of a lot. And you've been on twice on the Crypto Circle podcast, so it's about time I repaid the favor.
And look, mate, I can't wait to have you back on in the future. These conversations, I could go on forever.
Mate, literally could go on forever.
All right, thanks again, mate.
Appreciate it, bro. Cool.